Anytime anybody's negative about forestry, I mean, the forester, he wants to maintain his land and take care of what he has, otherwise he'll work himself out of a job. So, you know, we like to think that we're a lot better at managing our forest than we used to be. And a working forest is a renewable, magical piece to the landscape.
In America, we love our timber, and for good reason. 94% of houses in the United States are made from wooden framing. That is roughly 137 million. Today, we'll introduce you to one of the companies which makes our homes and furniture happen.
I came from the mud, there's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree, there's roots where I stand.
I'm David Zelsky, and this is the Fork in the Road podcast, presented by Georgia Grown and the fine folks at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Each episode, we feature stories from Georgia's farmers, fishermen, merchants, artisans, chefs, and others who help provide Georgia-grown products to folks in the Peach State and beyond. Today, we're headed down south to Valdosta, Georgia, to visit Langdale Forest Products, one of approximately two dozen companies owned by the Langdale Company. According to their website, LFP's main focus is Southern Yellow Pine Dimensional Lumber. Don't worry, I'll break it all down for you. But first, a little bit of history. Since 1894, the Langdale family name has been synonymous with forestry. That's when the Langdale Company was founded on the edges of the Okefenokee Swamp. The mantle of leadership was passed down through the generations, and as the company has expanded and evolved, the family name remains the same.
Well, there's only 17 owners of the company, so yeah. It takes 1,058 to make it work.
That's Jim Langdale, the president of Langdale Company. His leadership goes back five generations.
Okay, Langdale is not a brand new business. It goes back a few years. Tell me about its beginning.
So the Langdale Company was started in 1894 by my great-great-grandfather, John Wesley Langdale. It was founded at just below the Okefenokee Swamp in Council, Georgia. Started in the turpentine business, sawmilling in the woods, and made our way to Valdosta and 1946, set up operations on this yard then. And so we were in the naval stores business. We had a turpentine still here, sawmill operations, and we were in the pole treating business.
This facility is blessed to be in Valdosta. South Georgia soil is rich, and along with plenty of sunshine and usually plenty of rain, it's the perfect recipe for growing.
What is it about this area that is so good for growing pines and for doing the operations that you do?
Well, you know, South Georgia has a lot of landscape that's well suited for growing a pine tree. And so my family leveraged the opportunity to buy and own some land. And my forefathers, they wanted to hang a turpentine cup on the tree and to harvest the gum spirits. And then ultimately that led to making lumber and other products. And then, you know, our family has just really had the opportunity to use our land base and to grow the products from within. So to be somewhat vertically integrated.
Vertically integrated and always expanding.
Well, you know, we had a real opportunity in the late 80s. My dad made a decision to, and my Uncle Harley and the family, to get into the OSB business.
So I'm going to pause here and give you your first timber manufacturing lesson of the episode. OSB, or Oriented Structural or Strand Board, is one of the most common types of wood used in construction. It's considered a more consistent alternative to plywood. Here's Langdale Forest Products Operations Manager Hal Rowe with a little explanation.
The OSB is a dimensional board, like a 4x8, like a sheet of plywood, but it's oriented strand board. So it's chips of wood that are laid out and crossing each other, the grain, to make it strong, and then pressed and glued together, basically. It's taken over a lot of the plywood, where plywood used to be used in sheeting and all in housing. Most of what you see now is OSB on the rooftops and walls and everything. It's mostly OSB.
We'll hear more from Hal later when we visit him in the forests of South Georgia, where Langdale Timber is born. For now, let's go back to Jim.
Yeah, explain OSB, what it is and why it is an upgrade over the original plywood.
So, oriented structural board, it's been around probably since the 70s, maybe even earlier than that, late 60s. But oriented structural board was originally flake board, which was a sheeting product. When they really engineered it where the surface layer, the core layer, and the surface layer were actually more oriented for structural, OSB became a really high use structural panel for the housing industry. And you know, when our family built the plant in 87, it was starting to be really widely used for the sheeting market in housing. And plywood takes a lot bigger log, takes a lot more people, and orienting the flakes and making a rated sheeting out of pine pulp wood created a really cool market. And the acceptance over the last, really in my career, over the last 30 years, has really chipped away and gained a lot of, well, it's gained full use in the multifamily, single family housing construction all across North America.
When it comes to building houses, timber is the most time tested and sustainable resource we have available.
Well, you know, from a family kid perspective, I mean, it's a renewable resource, right? I mean, the beautiful thing about wood is we can do it again and again. You know, we're very serious about our forests and managing our forests, and obviously it's been a product that's been, it's the most widely used product in the housing market and has been for my life.
You may think timber companies only cut down trees, but they also plant them. In fact, Langdale planted over 10,000 trees in 2022 alone. Forest management is a big part of what timber companies do.
Well, from a forestry perspective, you know, we as much as technology's grown in the mill, we have a lot more scientific approach to the way we manage a forest. You know, we know a lot more about our land types. We know a lot more about our soil types. We match trees with the right dirt. If it makes sense to fertilize the trees, we fertilize the trees. And, you know, I think the evolution of all technologies has made our forestry practice better. You know, anytime anybody's negative about forestry, I mean, the forester, he wants to maintain his land and take care of what he has, otherwise he'll work himself out of a job. So, you know, we like to think that we're a lot better at managing our forest than we used to be. And a working forest is a renewable, magical piece to the landscape.
Over the years, all the hard work of forestry and timber manufacturing has gotten a lot easier, thanks to ever-evolving technology.
And so, you know, when I started in the business 30 years ago, you know, the optimization was very limited. It was a pretty manual process. And, you know, every facet of what we do today is highly mechanicalized, and people that get to come, you know, visit the mill, they kind of think we do it the old-fashioned way, and they don't realize how much computer optimization there is, how much better we manage the resource, how much better we grow the resource, how much better we site prep the land for the resource.
Thinning trees is an important part of forest management. It improves the quality of the trees and the overall health of the forest. And if there's anything we've learned on A Fork in the Road, it's this. There are no waste products. Everything gets repurposed and put to good use.
You know, as it relates to managing our forest smartly, you know, we thin a timber stand when it's ready, and all thinnings for the most part are all pulpwood. And that goes into making oriented structural board or paper products, you know, to local pulp and paper mills. We can also make medium density fiberboard out of the juvenile wood.
And when I say they use everything, I really mean it. Even the sawdust, which is used for fuel.
The sawdust from sawing the lumber is really the lowest value residual that's made, and we burn it to dry our lumber. And we use a continuous drying process that's also a new technology that's really revolutionized drying of lumber. We used to have old boiler here and created steam to dry our lumber, and now we use just green sawdust to gasify the sawdust to generate the heat to dry our lumber.
And when I said that I really meant that they use everything, I really, really meant it. The burnt remnants of sawdust used for fuel also get put to good use. Let's now talk to Thomas Tripp. He's the Environmental Health and Safety Coordinator.
As the green sawdust gets conveyed out of the sawmill, it'll go to the truck bin. And these trucks getting loaded by the truck bin, they'll either take it to our fuel shed for our dry kilns, or it'll take it to this dry kiln that has its own silo, which supplies fuel for the firebox. So all of our fireboxes here with our continuous dry kilns runs off of green sawdust generated by the sawmill. And after the sawdust gets charred and burned and spent, we'll actually collect that charred sawdust and we actually sell that to places that generate carbon filters or generate additives towards potting mix.
Neat, right? We'll hear more from Thomas later. Now, as I mentioned before, the main focus of Langdale Forest Products is dimensional lumber. This just means lumber cut and milled to specific sizes and dimensions. Back to Jim to tell us more.
Now, the dimensional lumber components that you see behind me, they're made from a little older growth timber. And, you know, we're shooting for a saw log is typically a 6 to 8 inch top log, which is usually 25 to 30 years old or older. It can be as old as, you know, 75 years old if it was a natural stem. And so we're managing that piece of lumber from a 2x4 to a 2x12 or that tree, sawing dimensional lumber out of it. And the technology today, you know, we scan it from the minute we unload it from a truck, and we make a decision based upon its length, how much curve is in the log, and the machines actually saw the lumber on the curve, which is curve sawing technology that's amazing.
Later on, we'll visit two Langdale plants and get a chance to explore that impressive technology. But first, let's journey to the source, the forests of South Georgia. That's where we'll meet up with Hal Rowe. He's the operations manager for the Langdale Company.
Pretty much everything that happens on the ground, as far as I help look after the logging, site prep, tree planting, road construction, maintenance, wildfire suppression, burning, control burning, about anything that's going on the ground, we look after.
What are you looking for in these trees? When, you know, how do you know when it's time to harvest? I drive down the road, I see trees. I don't know if they're ready.
Well, the main thing is growth and vigor. Pine tree typically somewhere between 25 and 30 years old. It's going to reach its peak in size. The crown, the vegetation in the top of the tree, the crown of the tree will start decreasing, which means it's having a lack of vigor and it won't be growing as much, won't be producing as much fiber. So when it gets like that, whether it's 25 or 30, we'll take it out and then start over.
Harvesting the best pine trees takes patience, a lot of patience. And foresters wait and wait and wait until the time is just right.
People always have said, wine is something you got to plan for in advance. You're not going to make money for a few years, but you're talking about trees that are 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
This is almost a generational business.
It is, and I've been doing this 29 years, and I'm seeing what I planted 29 years ago being clear cut and started over again. So I probably won't see another rotation on, but we'll get it ready for the next people.
Here out in the forest, enormous piles of pine trees are being hauled all around me. Loggers operate tractors, skidders, and other farming equipment, which roam the land like mechanical dinosaurs, changing the landscape as they move.
These guys are really, they're top notch. Like, we have 13 loggers on company land, and I mean, they'll haul anywhere from 60 to 100 loads each a week into our mills. So it's a lot of wood. A lot of logistics to get it there.
So where's all this timber going?
Sometimes it has to do with where it is, where the markets are, where we can haul the wood that we're cutting. We haul a lot of it back to our own mills, but then again, some of it will go to other mills in the area. And that's based on, especially now with the fuel cost, how far away we are from those mills, so the trucking cost of it. This wood, we're gonna have pulp wood and chipping saw. The chipping saw, you're making 2x4s, 2x6s, things of that nature. The pulp wood's going to our local pulp mills. Some of this is going to Georgia Biomass over in Waycross for fuel wood. and then a good portion of the tree length and all will be going back to our OSB mill in Brooks County, Langbore.
Here's Langdale Company President Jim Langdale again.
So most of the products that we make, all of the dimensional products here, we distribute through distributors that actually end up being in either through a treating company that might sell treated lumber to Lowe's and Home Depot, or distributors that go straight to large builders across the U.S. Southeast.
Just this is a good, real good company to work for. Like I said, I've been here 29 years since I graduated school, and there's a lot of longevity in the people that work there, and I think it says a lot to the companies that you know, people get there and they stay. In this day and time, we don't have a lot of that. So.
Langdale also works with other contractors and subcontractors.
Tell me about all the different companies that go in and partner up to make this all work.
Well, it's pretty unique. You know, all of our loggers are contractors. And back in the early days, we had some company-owned logging crews. But, you know, to be integrated as we are over time, we have a knife and saw company. And we help, obviously, subcontractors that work for us. We do our own saws and knives, and we do many more for other people that reach our territory. You know, we're in the fuel oil distributorship business now. I think they all just sort of evolved off of what did we need and how did we need it and how could we make things better. But you know, we touch quite a few people that actually help this thing go. And without them, we couldn't make it go.
A toxic fire, a plume of smoke, and a community demanding answers. In Conyers, Georgia, the biolab disaster left residents searching for truth and accountability. This season, GPB uncovers system failures, hears from whistleblowers, and follows neighbors still fighting to be heard. I'm Pamela Kirkland. Join me for season 2 of Manufacturing Danger, the Biolab Story. Listen now at gpb.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now let's leave the forest and head over to the plants where all this wood is processed. First, I want to explore dimensional lumber with Environmental Health and Safety Coordinator Thomas Tripp.
All right, Thomas, tell me what Willie's doing and what's going on here at the beginning stage.
All right, this is the beginning process of the sawmill. We have, this is our receiving deck for our crane to put the logs on the log deck. We have two lines. We have a 300 side debarker and we have a 500 debarker. So both of these are being loaded one at a time, singulated, and ran through a debarker, stripping the bark down and continuing down the line. So the 300 side receives the smaller dimensions, the 500 side receives the larger dimensions. We receive around 120 loads a day. On a good day, we receive 120 to 150 loads.
After the debarking process, the logs then go through a metal detector to ensure that they are 100% wood.
Goes through a metal detector before it goes to our saws. If it detects metal, it'll kick it off in a reject deck and reject it, and we'll actually remove the metal from the log and re-enter that log back into the system once it's removed. But here, each log has a little bend or a sweep to it, and what you're seeing here as it's entering this system here, it's actually rotating that log to where it's horns up or horns down. You don't want the curve or sweep to face east or west, you want it north and south. Because when it goes to that canter, you want it to have a clean, straight cut on each side.
Once that part of the process is done, the logs are then whisked off to another scanner, which determines just how they'll be cut.
After the logs get peeled, it goes through a scanner, and after that scanner, it relays the input to these saws into the computers. And at that point, it determines where the logs should be cut based on its diameter and its dimensions and its shape. So if you have a 20-foot long piece of log and it has a crook in it or a bend about 10 to 12 feet, it'll cut it at the crook or the bend. That way you have your long, you can optimize your piece of log. You can have a long, straight piece of lumber.
Now it's finally time to get this lumber cut, cleaned up, and ready for market.
PPE, got your earplugs? And as it's coming through here before it enters the canning system or the canner, it's rotating that log to where it's what we call horns up or horns down, which means the bend or the sweep is facing up or down. You want straight sides. You want no bends going east or west. You want it going north and south. That way that canning, the canner can have a clean cut on each side. And after the canner edges the sides, the bandsaw can take parallel boards off of each side of that log if it needs to. Here, every now and then those saws, if they don't have a full cut through, he'll have to reset it and adjust it and recut it. You don't want any partial cuts going through the sawmill. You want a full, complete cut before it enters. If you have an uncut piece of log, it may explode inside the gang or get jammed or a piece dislodged from that log. So everything has to be clean cut and separated cleanly. After it leaves the trimmer, it'll be sorted. There we have 68 lumber bins. It'll scan it as it's going down and drop it into assorted bins, a 2x4x8 or a 2x10x12. It all sorts it out within those 68 bins.
And this plant produces lumber fast, like really, really fast. And I'll tell you, it's only gotten faster in recent years.
Our goal in production is around 900,000 to 1,000,000 board feet a day with two shifts, two 10-hour shifts, Monday through Friday. That has improved in recent years. I think we've gone from, what'd he say, 35,000 an hour, board feet an hour, to 50,000 board feet an hour.
Now that we've seen every dimension of the dimensional lumber production process, let's head over to the Langdale-oriented structural board plant to see how that comes together. Try saying that again. You see why they say OSB. Meet Judson Moore. He's an assistant plant superintendent.
The serve that's making OSB is kind of a simple process. Okay, we're getting logs in, we're flaking them, we're drying them. We're adding glue, and we're pressing them.
Remember, OSB stands for Oriented Structural or Strand Board, and is considered a more consistent alternative to plywood. Now, back to Judson.
There's a lot that goes into making sure everything works together as one machine, from the crane all the way to the forklift, pulling the finished product out.
Like OSB itself, this plant has stood the test of time.
This OSB plant's been here since 1988. There's been a lot of growing, a lot of changing over the years. Tried to think progressively as far as being good stewards of the forest, as well as providing a good product and good jobs to the people in the community. OSB in particular fits pretty well in the ecosystem of wood products for us. It lets us bring in smaller wood before it goes on to grow into chip and saw wood or telephone poles, anything like that. Probably any home you've been in since 1990 has OSB in it. It's a good alternative to plywood, and just because it's cheaper doesn't mean it's any worse. It's all rated the same. As long as the builder builds the code, builds it properly, you're going to have a nice sturdy home with this product.
Wood is used to fuel all the operations of this plant, making it a highly sustainable enterprise.
I think we're the only 100% biomass-fueled OSB plant in North America. We were at one time, but we don't have any natural gas or propane. Everything we run on here to generate heat is the bark that comes off the trees. Any limbs or tops that come off the trees, we're burning that, as well as Inwood's chipping. The stumpage in the forest, when they grind that, they'll bring it here. We burn that for fuel, as well as a lot of these guys, the tree trimmers, the tree surgeons, and municipalities, they'll bring in the refuse, or whatever you want to call it. They'll bring it up on the hill there. We have a grinder, and we'll grind and generate some more fuel that way, and that helps out the community a little bit. It's a little bit cheaper for the tree surgeons to bring their stuff in rather than having to deal with the dump, and they've got, you know, 10 trucks a day trying to go to the dump. They can come here and drop off pretty fast and get back to what they were doing.
During the work week, this plant is a 20-hour-a-day operation.
So we get about roughly 500 log trucks a week in this facility, mainly Monday through Friday. We don't take a whole lot on the weekends, but they will come in, and we'll unload them 24/7, but they're mainly during the day. We've got 6 bins of logs here, and what we're trying to do is build up a bin of logs while we're feeding off another bin. And what that allows the wood to do is dry out from where it comes in from the forest. And when we're drying 40% moisture flakes down to 6-7% moisture flakes, that's just less energy we have to put into our drying process, the drier the original flake is. So that helps with our heat efficiency and how much fuel we're having to use in our system.
To get all these logs completely dry, logs are pulled by chains into a dryer drum, a colossal 60-foot-long metal tube which uses wind and science to get these logs as dry as possible before the next step in production.
Inside the dryer drum, it's a single-pass dryer. So it's just, again, it's something, you know, it's like a closed dryer at your house. You're putting something in one side, it's tumbling around the inside and making its way to the end. The flakes are just, they're loose inside, they're tumbling, and they're being pulled out of the dryer drum by this ID fan here. I believe that's a 600 horsepower fan, so you're pulling a negative draft to get the flakes out. Once the flakes leave the dryer drum, they're making a vertical turn and going to this large cyclone.
The next step is flaking the logs. That means cutting them down to the little pieces which make up OSB. For that step, we'll use a machine called, what else? A flaker.
So these are constantly monitored. The knives are changed a couple times a day on each flaker, as well as the clamps and scoring tips and all that. So all of that has to be monitored. We change knives about twice a day, but when you order a knife, each knife can be resharpened about 6 times before you have to toss it. So they're not disposable knives, they're reused. And you get about 8 to 9 hours of runtime on a set of knives before you gotta change it. So as the flaker's stroking through the wood, that 15-second stroke, that's what's adding up to 9 hours of actual cutting time.
Crisscrossing and layering the wood is the reason OSB lumber is so strong. Judson gave me more insight on how this all works.
So our OSB here is comprised of 4 layers. And what we're gonna do is the top and bottom layers, we're gonna lay parallel to working direction. The 2 core layers, we're gonna lay perpendicular to working direction. And that crisscross pattern is what's gonna give the board its strength. If we laid all the flakes parallel to working direction, the board structure would still be okay, but you'd have a really floppy board. It'd be the same as having like a 16-foot 2x4. Sure, it's still 2x4, but it's not going to have much in the way of deflection strength. That crisscross pattern is what's going to give the board some rigidity and make it safe to walk on as far as being a flooring product or a roofing product.
The wood flakes spit out by the flaker might seem random, but their size and shape are made especially for OSB wood. The wood flakes are put into another machine which presses them down and glues the whole thing together with a resin-based sealant. The finished boards are about 5/8 of an inch thick.
Not a half inch, 5/8.
After that, it's over to the saw line where the final cuts are made.
Now we're down here at the saw line. This is where the mat gets its final cut and gets cut quick. We've got 2 passes of saws. The first pass is cutting it lengthways down the middle and also trimming up the edges. The second pass is going to cut it into the 8-foot length sections.
Finally, after the boards are cut, they're weighed and treated with another sealant, which protects against the elements.
So after the units are weighed, and they're sent to the paint booth. They're painted with a heavy water-based latex paint. Our particular branding color is red.
And the paint serves a couple of purposes. One, with the red, it lets people, when they're driving by, they know whose product it is. Lane Boards is red. Two, when me and you are buying a house and our builder is ordering a unit of board to be sent to the job site and it's sitting out there for a couple of days and it gets rained on, that water's going to prevent any rain from getting to the board and potentially swelling it up a little bit. The paint is a protective sealer.
OSB is not only used for flooring and roofing. Besides the building material itself, Langdale uses OSB to make furniture for inside the home.
OSB has traditionally been a housing product, but after 08, 09, and the market we had there, since we're a smaller company, we were able to pivot pretty fast and we got into the furniture market. So all this unpainted product behind me are going to furniture customers.
So now you know everything you've ever wanted to know about timber production. I've had a great time touring the Langdale facilities and getting a close-up view of how it all works. A big thanks to Jim, Hal, Thomas, Greg, and Judson for showing me around. After all, though Langdale Forest Products has a massive arsenal of flakers, scanners, skidders, tractors, debarkers, and other mechanical tools to make the process easier, none of this would work without the eye and careful attention of a huge group of dedicated human workers.
As technical and, you know, you can create all the programs, you still need these guys. You still got to have these guys to have eyes on it. They see things the machines or scanners don't. We have cross-ups. They have to put their hands on it and still handle the material. Without these guys, this place wouldn't run. They are very important to the process. Everybody is.
For more stories like this one, you can watch A Fork in the Road on GPB TV or anytime on the GPB.org website. That's where you'll be able to listen to and subscribe to this podcast or download it on your favorite podcast platform. I'm David Zelsky. Thanks for listening to A Fork in the Road.